From theunce.com, this is the Unce Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunce.com. Hello and welcome to the Unce Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. For the second week in a row, we're bringing you a special two-part episode with one of the biggest acts in the entire electronic music scene. Derek Vincent Smith is Pretty Lights. From humble beginnings, this Colorado-based producer has turned his flashy hip-hop, glitch, and soul sound into a giant empire. Headlining festivals across the country and selling out giant arenas, Smith has brought his music to the masses all for free, spearheading the movement to give away his music to his fans and turning that mission into his own brand, Pretty Lights Music. With a trilogy of EPs released last year and another album on the way, Derek Vincent Smith shows no signs of slowing down. On today's episode, we discuss his early forays into the world of producing, his introduction to the festival scene, which has catapulted him to celebrity status, and he clears the air concerning his partnerships with his live drummers. Today's show is brought to you by Electric Forest Festival, taking place June 30th through July 3rd in Rothbury, Michigan, at the stunning Double J Resort. In addition to Pretty Lights, you can catch headlining sets from Tiesto, Bass Nectar, Cascade, and a ton of other huge electronic artists. Oh, and by the way, there's an indoor water park. You can win a pair of tickets to Electric Forest on our contest page at theunce.com. More details at electricforestfestival.com. All right, let's get to the interview. You're obviously a staple in the jam community at this point. You began doing late nights for STS9 and the Biscuits. You grew up in Colorado, which is a cornerstone for jam, as well as, you know, the bluegrass movement of the 90s, which produced String Cheese and Salmon and all that. Did you come up in the festival scene, or were you really just a hip-hop kid and that was it?
Definitely didn't come up in the festival scene. I was a hip-hop kid. And it's funny when you say you're like a staple of a jamtronic scene, that's kind of something I've been like coping with since the beginning. That's definitely like was a lot more true like a couple years ago.
Sure.
2 or 3 years ago, you know what I'm saying? But at this point, especially in Colorado, it's like that part is gone. You know what I'm saying? It's like it's producers, it's DJs, it's dubstep, it's like the bands that are playing are not jam band scenes, you know what I'm saying? It's like the, you know, I don't really see anyone, any artist very much, especially in this scene or anywhere much in the States. I guess I don't have a, you know, my ear down everywhere, but
sure.
Besides, you know, a couple groups that have been around for a long time.
But, you know, at the same time, these were sort of your first introductions in
yes.
the scene, and that's where people started to get a hold of you. But this was, I guess, completely new to you when you were starting to play these festivals.
Yeah, well, you know, it started because Soundtribe, I was doing, like, after parties for those guys, and that was kind of like the whole jam connection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, before Pretty Lights, I was actually in a band that kind of tried to do that thing like years ago, more of like on a hip hop tip, but the live band, like electro kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, for sure. But the festival, you know, I didn't play the festival until like a year and a half into like doing the Pretty Lights thing. It was more like after parties and things like that. Some of my first festivals, I think, like Wakarusa, and then the first like Bonnaroo, not the first Bonnaroo, but the Bonnaroo was the first one of the first festivals I played, and that was also kind of when things really started to like pop off for me. So I'm not, you know, it grown to the point where I did a late night at Bonnaroo, it was like 8,000 people, and definitely the biggest show I played up to that point. And yeah, it definitely helped set things off.
You were mentioning those bands that you played in. At what point did you say, you know, I like playing bass, I like doing this live sort of hip-hop electro sound, but when did you say, you know what, I'm going to move more into production and putting my music out through, you know, my producing rather than actually playing it?
I think that it was after struggling to tour in a band for 3 years in a van that kept breaking down trying to sell CDs to people for $10 and, yeah, sucked. I mean, there were good points, whatever. I have a hilarious DVD of one of the tours of my old band that I hope never leaks its way onto the internet.
You know, you're a celebrity now. It's gonna be like the new sex tape. Your old band footage. That's the new thing that people don't want to get out.
Yeah, right. But yeah, man, it was just a struggle. We constantly broke, you know, having to hustle when we're at home, stay on the grind so we could like pay rent to be able to go out on tour and like, you know what I'm saying? It was like, I think that it was kind of like an exhaustion of that lifestyle combined with like me realizing that my production skills were like evolving, and I was seeing that like the beats that I were making were like up to par with the records that I was listening to, you know, and like my influences and stuff like that. When you realize like your shit's as hot as like what you're rocking in your car, you know, it's like, well, you know, maybe we can give this thing a go. You know what I'm saying? And then, you know, but being in a band a long time ago, you know, years ago, and trying to sell CDs as merch to like get food money on tour or whatever, like made me definitely like, you know, made me realize how futile it was, and like that's kind of like where the free download thing started, and I was just like, you know, fuck this, I'm just gonna put it out. If I want people to hear this, I don't give a damn if they give me $10 for it, because that's just gonna make less people hear it, blah 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 blah. It's kind of obvious why I started it, but yeah, so I mean, all those experiences.
Keep 'em Bouncing from 2009's Passing By Behind Your Eyes. Available for free at prettylightsmusic.com. When you first began producing, did you have a mentor that showed you the ropes, taught you how to beat match and use drum programmers and APCs, and got you into the world of the modular synths that you're using now and all that? Or did you have to figure that all out yourself?
Good question. You know, definitely self-taught. Definitely. I mean, to an extent. It's not like I had a mentor. What I had was a homie. You know what I'm saying? And, like, his name is Michael Menner. And he's on Pretty Lights Music, and we grew up together, and we both started making beats at the same time. We both started rapping at the same time. We both started, you know, using MPCs, and eventually Cool Edit Pro on to Reason and Ableton Live and Logic, and then into the, you know, and he was in the band that I was in. You know, we were like, we've been homies from the get-go, and it's like, so not a mentor, but someone around to always challenge me, and vice versa. You know what I'm saying? When you have a friend who's like, who makes a beat that's hotter than yours, and you're like, you know, you're like, that's dope. But at the same time, you're like, fuck that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I think that was a massively important, you know, part of like my development as like a producer, as a musician, was just having like someone who was on the level, who was a good friend, who, you know, we were able to fucking push each other until, and we continue to do so, I think.
Exactly, exactly. Now, in many of your tracks, there's a throwback element. You are fascinated with the world of soul and funk from the 60s, 70s, 80s. Beyond the samples themselves, you're also drawn into that whole old school aesthetic with the warmth and the scratchiness of the vinyl. Is it because you're so rooted in the hip-hop culture that you want to sample those records and those beats that the pioneers were using, or is it because you grew up with those old soul records and that's what you were sort of brought into your musical maturity with?
Okay. Not really either. Maybe a little of one of those. I didn't grow up with, like, a musical mom that, like, hooked me, you know, like, turned me on to, like, the dope shit when I was a kid. It was like moms was rocking the country music radio in the car, and, like, dads was fucking listening to Jimmy Buffett, and I had, like, a very, you know...
You had defined it yourself, obviously.
My musical childhood was a fucking drought, and anyway, when I finally discovered what, you know, some real shit, it was like in junior high with, like, Nirvana. I was like, whoa. So it was by no means like me being raised on, like, soul and funk and shit. It's like, and then that turned into, you know, whatever. I was into punk and hip hop and Beastie Boys, Wu-Tang Clan, eventually, like, got into the underground shit. And, like, and then, you know, not until all of that stuff had happened was I exposed to Dark Side of the Moon. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I had this kind of, like, reverse musical exploration where it's like I went from, you know, modern popular to, like, the underground, and then started, like, finding out what happened, like, in decades past, you know? Sure, and I realized, sure, like, this is what sounds dope. And you could, like, and then when I started making beats, you know, I was always a big fan of DJ Shadow, so that was a massive influence. And, you know, when I first heard of DJ Shadow, I didn't really get what they were saying. They're like, oh, introducing, it was made completely from vinyl. Like, what? That didn't even make sense to me. Like, I pictured him, like, spinning, like, 13 different records at the same time and, like, matching art. You know what I'm saying? I didn't, and yeah, when it finally clicked that you could, like, sample and manipulate and make it sound different and tune and match and stretch and add and build and collage, and, like, I was like, holy shit. And then I started messing with programs like Reason and Sense, and I was like, well, this stuff all sounds like fucking garbage. It just, yeah, like, sounds cheesy. You know what I mean? Like
the factory preset.
Yeah, you know, digital synth. I mean, you can make that shit sound dope. I'm not gonna, like, front and say that you can't do that. I mean, factory, yeah, but for the most part, from my perspective at that point, it needed the warmth and the soul to make it something fresh. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
That's like to stand the test of time. And, obviously, so yeah. And I also realized I was in a band, you know what I'm saying? Like, I recorded albums, I engineered albums for my band in, like, studios. And, like, that was kind of like my role, audio engineer, producer, like, of the band's records. And I'm realizing, like, I can't, it's really difficult for me to, like, plug in a guitar and have my guitarist play the part and make it sound like what I heard in my head, you know? It's like,
right,
because I want it to sound like it's 40 years old. So, you know, that was one of the biggest reason of why I felt like I needed a sample to manifest the vision of the music that was, you know, that I wanted to create. It's because it's like, that's what had to happen to get that sound. It was not as simple as just, like, playing an instrument. Because not like I can't, you know, play guitar, play keys, whatever. You know what I mean? And so, you know, that's why I'm, like, so stoked about my new records. Because it's like, I'm finally at the point where I can do that. You know what I mean? I can, like, get a dope studio with all analog gear and, like, cut it to tape or put it on tape and then cut it to vinyl and run it back and put it on tape again and until it sounds like it's 50 fucking years old. And,
exactly.
You know, that's the new shit. That's what I'm doing now, so...
me, but I know change has gotta come, man. Ooh, yes it is.
Sam Cooke there on Change Is Gonna Come from Pretty Lights' 2008 double album, Filling Up the City Skies.
I wonder, do you think that the era of the genre-specific DJ is over? Do you feel like a lot of your success comes from the fact that you're not pegged down as any one thing on a given night? You'll bring the intensity up with some prog house, electro house, four on the floor madness, and then drop in the dubstep beats that are creeping into your sound, all the while infusing everything you do with instrumentals versus choruses from the world of hip hop?
I hope so. It doesn't seem like that crazy to me, you know what I mean? Like, but I mean, at the same time, that's because I'm producing everything I do live, and so it's like, I like electro, I like dubstep, I like hip hop, I like fucking two step, whatever. And so, you know, I'm just playing the hottest shit that I think I've made. And it's like I, you know, I was like a rapper musician turned producer as opposed to like a DJ turned producer turned musician or something like that. You know, it's like, it's not the traditional sort of evolution to get to this point. And so I didn't really, I don't know. It's hard to think about, but yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot more potential for dynamic and energy and to rock a show if you're not, you know, just hanging on one genre for sure.
like Sauce, the breakthrough hit for Pretty Lights, from filling up the city skies.
Almost a year ago, you brought on Adam Deitch as your live drummer, a funk and hip-hop drummer and producer in his own right. And obviously, he's got a lot on his plate this spring and summer with Break Science and a reunion tour with Lettuce. When you go out and you do solo Pretty Lights gigs, do you have a different MO or game plan? Does the solo performance give you more freedom and ability to maybe change direction on a dime?
Yes. Yes. You know what? I'm going to take this opportunity to, you know, kind of explain this whole situation. I had a drummer before Adam. I played with, you know, the old drummer. He pretty much just played drums with me live. You know, I was making all these tracks, whatever, and when I started playing shows, you know, I was like, oh, what am I going to do? Just sit up there and, like, trigger samples and like, beats on stage? Like, I need some, like, something more visually entertaining. You know what I mean? So it's like,
sure.
So I asked my homie to play drums with me, whatever. And it slowly kind of turned into this thing where people were like, this is Pretty Lights. They're like, which part of the track did your drummer make? And I'm like, well, no, he didn't do shit. He just kind of like plays on top of it live. So I'm like, okay. So I started to get, you know, whatever. It's not that big of a deal, but you can imagine.
Sure, that's your art. That's your art out there.
Yeah, exactly. You put your heart and soul in this music, and then people are like, oh, think that you only had a part in it or something like that, whatever. So I was kind of frustrated with that, you know, but it's gotten to the point where it's like, this is what people expected. A producer, a drummer on stage, whatever. At the beginning, yeah, I don't think there was anyone else doing that.
Yeah.
Now, you know, every producer and their brother are playing with a live drummer. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
It's like everywhere. So I'm like, okay, cool. That was cool for a while. Whatever, I'm over it. Anyway, my whole, you know, then I was not really, at the time I switched, you know, I asked Adam Deitch to play with me. I was like, not really feeling the dynamic between me and my last drummer. I was just kind of like, it was frustrating to me. I was like, this, you know, whatever. I was limited. Like, if I made a new track, he wasn't trying to play it because, you know, I want to be able to, like, make a track in the green room and, like, drop it on stage that night.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? And so it was like, you know, plus other things, whatever. We weren't really getting along. So I was like, whatever, I'm over this. Plus, you know, beyond that, you know, it took me a while to realize this, but live drums on top, you know, on top of produced beats, in my opinion, it kind of takes away from the sound quality.
I can hear that exactly. I know exactly what you're saying.
Depending on how it's mixed, and it can add some energy via the energy of the person playing, whatever, the cymbals and things like that, but I just am annoyed with snare flam, bass drum clutter. That was frustrating. Anyway, Adam was more on point. Adam Kills, amazing drummer and producer, like you said. When I was with Adam, his role, though, was strictly as drummer. Really. It wasn't like, we weren't like producing together. He was, you know, he makes his beats and he works with Break Science, whatever.
And that's what he said. He was on the show a couple of months ago and he said, you know what, my thing is Break Science and I do that with Borum and we produce our beats. When I sit in with Derek, you know, it's his productions. I'm adding a little flavor, but that's it. Those are his babies, and, you know, there should be no question who's, you know, basically the brains behind Pretty Lights.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Adam. But, you know, at the same time, like, I want to give a massive big up to Adam because he's freaking amazing. He's like, and when I started playing with Adam, I was like, be more stoked on the dynamic energy, the sound, and the flavor. Like, he put, like, the flavor and, like, the added energy that made, like, having a drummer on stage, like, dope again. You know what I mean? But at the same time, the problem that I'm running into is that, like, my tracks are fairly intricate. The arrangements are, like, changing over time, and it's not just like, you know, four bars all the way through. I got extra beats here and there, extra bars, extra three bars, extra two beats, like little random things, little that I interject into the arrangement that, in my opinion, create like a suspension, a sort of surprise element in my production style. And if I don't go over that or teach someone that beforehand or have a system to call it out live on the fly so everyone's on the same page, then it becomes a real pain in the ass to try to pull off live. You know what I'm saying? Especially when I like want to flip it up live, switch it. You know, so back to your point, yes, I wanted to move away from playing with the drummer because that allows me to do what I want, to manipulate my music, to be so much more involved in like the production, the arrangement, the manipulation, the improvisation. Plus it makes it, you know, in my opinion, sound better coming out the speakers.
Yeah.
And, you know what I'm saying? And now that like I'm touring with like a three-dimensional LED video city laser light show, it's like, you know, that's sort of like the visual stimuli.
Yeah, you don't need to worry about just you being up there and punching buttons. There's other things for people to focus on as well.
Exactly. I mean, though I want to continue to evolve the concept of the producer performing, which still has, you know, a lot of room to evolve. But yeah, that's basically the deal. I'm still play with Adam in the studio. You know, on my new record, I brought him in and he played drums on a lot of the things I'm working on. So there will definitely be live drums that Adam played on the record, which has never been the case in the past. You know what I'm saying? Like, all my drums have been like, you know, 98% of the drums on my records have been programmed or sampled.
That concludes part one of the Unts podcast with Derek Vincent Smith of Pretty Lights. Check back in with the Unts tomorrow to hear the rest of the interview. We discuss Derek's label, his new record, his ridiculous summer festival plans, and his old buddy Bass Nectar. On today's program, we heard tracks from his early work with Pretty Lights. We'll dig into more contemporary stuff, especially his three EPs from 2010 on tomorrow's show. Special thanks go to Crystal Blackburn of Pretty Lights Music, Carrie Lombardi with Madison House, and of course my guest, Derek Vincent Smith. Pretty Lights is on a bit of a break right now. You'll be able to catch Derek at the Hangout Festival for two sets on the 21st and 22nd, followed by Lightning in a Bottle Memorial Day weekend. Remember, you'll be able to catch Pretty Lights at Electric Forest Festival over July 4th weekend in beautiful Rothbury, Michigan, alongside Bass Nectar, Tiesto, Cascade, Spangle, Skrillex, Excision, and a whole boatload of Unts favorites. Now's a good time as any for a contest update. This week you'll have a chance to win tickets to the Ocean Beats Festival in San Diego, featuring Freak Nasty, Anasia, and Alicia, among others. Today is also the last day to enter the contest to win a pair of tickets to the Spangle, Excision, and Random Rab show at the Congress Theater in Chicago this Saturday. Zebler is doing visuals, so you probably want to catch this one. And of course, you can still win festival passes to Camp Barefoot, Liberate, and Electric Forest later this summer. All you have to do is visit theunts.com/contests and sign up. Remember to visit theunts.com for news, artist profiles, and tour dates from across the electronic music spectrum. And go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Write us a review, tell us what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the program, or you'd like to be a guest on the Unts podcast, or you'd like to sponsor an episode, contact me at anand@theunts.com. That's ANAND @theunts.com.